Spiegel and Holmes.
Barry Rosner.
But seriously, why are you guys bothering me? What do you want from me? I think I've made it clear that I don't really want to participate anymore. And yet you call and you call. I'll say it again. I love Tanny, but I don't understand why he just won't leave me alone. Seriously.
Afternoons on the Score.
This will come as a shock, I know, but I am almost speechless. The reason I am here, they tell me, is that I played the game a certain way. That I played the game the way it was supposed to be played. I don't know about that. But I do know this. I had too much respect for the game to play it any other way. And if there is a single reason I am here today, it is because of one word. Respect. I was taught you never ever disrespect your opponent or your teammates. Or your organization or your manager. And never, ever your uniform. Make a great play, act like you've done it before. Get a big hit, look for the third base coach and get ready to run the bases. Hit a home run, put your head down, drop the bat, run around the bases. Because the name on the front is a lot more important than the name on the back. That's respect. I want to say thank you to friends like Barry Rosner, great writer and good friend. It's fun talking baseball with you, Barry. Thank you.
Man. That's Ryan Sandberg on the day he was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York. And he thanked his friend and his collaborator on some things at different points in his life. Barry Rosner, and Barry Rosner joins me, Matt Spiegel, and him, Lawrence Holmes, right now on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. Can I say collaborator? Is that okay, Barry? Because that's a wonderful moment.
Yeah, man.
I
forgot about that, honestly. And he did that. Obviously, I didn't do that. You know, he took most of what I wrote verbatim from the first time I read it to him, and he loved it. But obviously, I did not know he was going to do that. I had forgotten that he did that. I've never watched it because I was afraid to. I was so nervous. It's funny, that day, it was such a great day, but I was so nervous because as much as I enjoyed writing it, once we were on the precipice, I got up from where I was sitting and walked about 200 feet back and just started pacing because it suddenly hit me that I might have just ruined this guy's life. And so I was nervous and, we got a laugh in the first 10 seconds, I think. And I thought, okay, this is going to be okay. And then of course it was almost universally beloved quickly. It was like a revival meeting up on stage. Rhino said that he could hear the guys behind him, all the Hall of Famers sitting behind him saying, just going along with them the whole time saying, that's right. That's damn right. You're damn right. And over and over again. And he felt that energy from them. And those guys loved it. Those guys loved that someone was saying the right things and had an idea that baseball should be played the way that it had always been played up until, I don't know, maybe 10 years before that or whenever that started. And as good as the day was, it was a lot better that night when, late that night at the team hotel, Outback. Sorry, this is.
Yeah, hang on, Barry. But before we even get to the night, let's add the context. Let's go ahead and put the point on it. That's it. Barry wrote the Hall of Fame speech of Ryan Sandberg. And if anybody has not seen it or has not heard it, it came out passionately in defense of baseball and in anger at performance-enhancing drug users and at the league for kind of allowing it and looking the other way. So when he talks about the revival, Lawrence, he's he's talking about a whole stage full of Hall of Famers who were like, finally, somebody is saying it. And that's the risk that you took, Barry, that you were afraid might have ruined his life. And of course, it did not. It did the opposite, if anything.
Well, and fellas, credit to him. You know, when we first talked about it, I said, look, you could do what everybody else does. You could thank every player, every coach, every manager, and everybody you've ever known in baseball, and you will bore the living hell out of everyone, and no one will be surprised because you're Ryan Sandberg. And he laughed, and he said, well, what do you have in mind? And I said, well, you could make a statement that people will never forget. And he said, well, I like that idea. I said, all right, well, we had been in Cooperstown for a preview, so I said, just give me a day. And on the plane on the way home, it took me about 15 minutes to write the whole thing. And I was thinking about it on the drive back to Albany. And I remember the intersection I was at when I had stopped at an intersection and I saw a red light, and it just hit me. Knowing how to turn two is more important than knowing how to find the little red light on the dugout camera. And I wrote it on the back of a Kleenex box. Because I didn't want to forget that one. But the rest of it I wrote on the plane on the way home. And the first time I read it to him, he loved it. And the credit goes to him because, look, when you know someone really well, and we had written a book together and done so many things together, when you know someone really well, it's easy to find their words for them. But the credit goes to him for wanting to do it because I think there was quite a bit of risk there. No risk on my part. I mean, you know, nobody cares about me. No one would have known. And, he felt it was that important. So all credit to him for doing it. And, it was a life-changing day for him.
Barry, the people that we cover, you cover them, you're professional. You have a professional relationship with people. What was it about Ryan that allowed you to kind of let down your wall of reporter athlete to then making him a friend?
Well, when it was strictly player writer, I would say it was extremely professional, although I did invest a lot of time in him. I mean, look, people thought he had nothing to say, and people thought he was boring, and people thought he wasn't very smart, actually. And those things were all wrong, but no one had spent any time trying to get to know him and investing the time in any relationship of any kind in your life, you've got to invest the time. And I invested the time and got to know him, and we developed a very good working relationship, but I would say it was extremely professional until he retired. And then we wrote a book together and became good friends. And he came back for a couple of years and then retired again. And so obviously at that point we had become friends, but I think it really starts with giving the guy a chance. I mean, look, he wasn't dumb. He knew that if he was boring, guys wouldn't stand around his locker very long. And that was great. He didn't want any of that. He wasn't interested in any of that. You know, he was worshipped in this town. I don't know how much you guys remember that, if Matt, you were even here at that time. But he was absolutely worshipped in this town. And he could have been huge in terms of endorsements and all those other things. And he just didn't want it. He wanted to play baseball and he wanted to go home. And playing baseball was very hard for him. They called him Kid Natural, and it all looked very natural because he was such a great athlete. But baseball was really hard, and he worked really hard at it. And the responsibility he felt to be Ryan Sandberg every single day after June of 1984 was a lot of pressure for him. And he felt he had to be perfect, and he felt he had to be great, and he wanted to make sure that the people coming to the park to see him were getting what they paid for. So that was where his time was spent. And if he didn't have to spend it talking to reporters, that was fine with him. So he didn't give most people a lot, but they also didn't try to get a lot. And I was fortunate that I did. And like I said, then that relationship changed years later when he retired. But Lawrence, I think it's just as simple as giving a guy a chance to voice what he thinks or to expound on what others had not allowed him to simply because they didn't hang around long enough to find out.
I love the question from Lawrence to Barry Rosner about how you got in. And of course, even though he's a great player, he's a person and he needs to know that you actually give a crap. So then the payoff for that personally and professionally maybe culminates with that night after the speech is delivered and he's thankful for what you guys did together and he's comfortable enough with you as a friend. What did you get to be a part of that night after the speech, Barry?
Well, it was the best night I ever had in baseball, that's for sure. At the team hotel at the bar, I don't know, I think he called me at my hotel at around 10 o'clock or something like that and said, you got to get over here. And I said, well, I can't go in. You know, it's only for Hall of Famers. He said, I'll meet you at the gate. And got me in. We walk in the bar, and there's 60 Hall of Famers. And I was like, Rhino, I want to meet Koufax, Seaver, and Aaron. That's all I want. Well, now he thinks it's funny, and he's introducing me to everybody, including Ozzie Smith, who I hated. So, I mean, I want nothing to do with that. But, you know, he's got my camera, and he's taking pictures of me with all these guys. Seaver broke my camera, by the way. I should post that picture. It looks like me and a fuzzy John Madden. I should probably find that somewhere.
Wait, why did he break your camera?
He dropped it. Seaver, oh. Well, Rhino's taking the picture. This is before cell phones. Rhino's taking the picture, and Seaver, who was overserved, came stumbling up to him and knocked the camera out of his hands. The guy with, you know, 14 gold gloves drops the camera, and there goes the camera. It did not work anymore after that. But thankfully, you know, it had a memory stick, so I got some good pictures out of there. But later on the patio, you know, we took some more pictures. And then Rhino and I just sat out there for hours talking about what had happened that day. And it was such a high. It was such – we couldn't come down from the high of what had just happened. And we just kept reliving it over and over again. He did say that he saw me a football field away pacing in the back and that it was a distraction for him. And I said, well, what are you doing looking back there? He said, well, I was looking for you. I wanted to know how we were doing. I said, well, I was a little nervous. I didn't know how this was going to go, but that, I just remember sitting out there and talking for hours about it. And I don't think either of us understood really the magnitude of it or that it was going to change his life as much as it did. But
did you meet Koufax and Aaron? And who was the third one you wanted to meet?
I wanted to meet Koufax and Seaver and Aaron. I actually sat down and Sandy Koufax could not have been nicer. He doesn't know me from Adam's Off Ant,
which yes. is,
you know, It's a Wonderful Life. Thank you. I mean, he has no idea who I am. And he says, sit down, sit down. And I sit down and he's telling me about the game he threw in the World Series when he won a World Series game and couldn't throw a breaking pitch because his elbow hurts so bad. I mean, how is this happening? What am I doing there? And why is this happening? Right. That's what kind of night it was. But I do have a picture with Koufax and one with Aaron. But my picture with Seaver is destroyed because he knocked the camera out of his hands.
Barry, for Cubs fans or baseball fans that didn't live through Rhino's run as a Cub, how would you explain the player that he was?
Well, he was a perfect baseball player. I mean, he could do everything on a baseball field really, really well. If you were creating a baseball player, at least in the era in which I grew up, you would create Ryne Sandberg. Tall, extremely athletic, fast, as good first to third or second to home as anybody in the game. Extraordinary fielder, great hands, great eyes, great understanding of the game, great knowledge of everything that was happening with all positions on the field and with his opponents. So, yeah, he hit for average. He hit eventually hit for power. He could steal a base anytime he wanted. One year he stole 54 bases, and people were like, why don't you do that more often? He's like, well, I did it if the situation called for it. I didn't just steal a base because everyone was like, why didn't you have a 30-30? Because he had 30 homer seasons, and he had a 54 steal season and many 30 steals. He's like, well, because it didn't call for it. He wasn't about the stats. was just a tremendous baseball player. Absolutely worshipped in this town on and off the field because he did everything the right way and was so respectful toward the game. If you had a child at that time and you were looking for a hero in sports, this was the guy. He understood he was a role model and he took it very seriously. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, for others on the outside looking in, it probably didn't seem like a burden. It probably seemed like the game was easy for him and all these things were easy for him. It was a tremendous burden for him. So it was always his focus to be great on the baseball field. And that meant there wasn't as much time for the other things that everybody wanted, which was being gregarious or, you know, the life of the party or doing the endorsements or being great on TV or any of those kinds of things. And I remember he was criticized for not doing endorsements. And I thought, well, what do you care if he does endorsements? You know, there are people on your radio station at the time who criticized him for that, for being boring. And I thought, damn, the guy's a hell of a baseball player. What do you care? People loved him. I just think it should be noted that as great an athlete as he was, and, you know, he signed to play quarterback at Washington State. He was an All-American quarterback and All-State in baseball and basketball and could have played football, could have played quarterback at a lot of places. It should be noted that it was not his great athletic ability or, you know, the gifts that God gave him that made him a Hall of Fame baseball player. It was his work ethic, and that should never be forgotten. No one ever worked harder. There were better players. There were more gifted players. No one ever worked harder than Ryan Sandberg on a baseball field. And, you know, while others in spring training were drinking their coffee and having breakfast, he was the one who was out on the field taking 60 grounders to his left, 60 to his right, and 60 right at him every single morning of spring training. Long after he'd become the greatest fielder at the position in baseball history. So I think that's something that is maybe often forgotten. Mm-hmm. I just think he was in many ways misunderstood as the man that he was.
Barry Rosner on Twitter tweeted a picture of, looks like you and Ryan at breakfast. You're wearing, I believe, a Masters hat, and he's got an Amen Corner hat, and it looks like this may have been in recent weeks or months. Can last thing, Barry, can you share where he was as a person here in the final months of his life?
Yeah, well, Matt, what makes me most sad about this is that he was in such a good place in his life. I tried to describe to you, and maybe I did a poor job, of how difficult it was for him to be a baseball player. You know, he admitted many times that he didn't have enough fun while he was playing, but the game was just so hard that there wasn't room for that in his, you know, in his world at the time. The game was really hard. He climbed, you know, he was a 20th round draft pick because they thought he was playing football. So he climbs every level of the minor league system and the Philly system. He is blocked by numerous shortstops there, has no future in the Philly system. After being great at every level of the minors, he gets to the majors and then he's traded to the Cubs and he gets to spring training and he's got five gloves because no one knows what position he's going to play, and ends up playing third base with a week left in spring training, and was terrific, by the way. Moves to second at the end of that year. He has this phenomenal 20-year professional career. He retires and breathes a deep sigh of relief. Then comes the Hall of Fame, gives the speech, deep sigh of relief. And now what am I going to do with the rest of my life? He decides he wants to manage. What does he do again? He starts at the very bottom of the minor leagues, spends 5 years in the minors, climbs every single level, does everything the way he's supposed to. The Cubs say, we don't care. We're not interested in you. He goes to the Phillies, reaches his goal, makes it to the major leagues. He always had goals, and he always took all these steps. Reaches the major leagues. It doesn't work out for whatever reason. It was an old team. It was a bad team. He was a guy who developed young players, so it was not a great fit, whatever. He leaves the Phillies. He comes back here. He calls me. He says, you think they would let me back in. I said, I'm sure they would. I'll call Theo. I call Theo. I tell Theo, hey, he just wants to come back. He doesn't want to work. He just wants to be part of the family again. The Cubs bring him back in. He gets a ring. And now everything in his life is perfect. He's got a wife that he loves, numerous kids, all these grandkids. He's living the best life that he could possibly live, finally, with no pressure and nothing in his life except happiness. And then this happens. And it just, you know, look, we've all lost people. I've had so much in my life. We all go through it. And you know, sometimes you say, well, that person lived a long time and lived a good life. And sometimes it's unfair. Well, this was a guy who's a young man at 65, who's got, you know, a couple of decades of really good living in front of him. And it makes me horribly sad that he's not going to get that chance now. And, you know, that's life. Some people don't get the breaks. It's just, you know, there was nothing about his life that was easy, and that was okay with him. He believed in hard work. He believed everything should be difficult, and he thought that was a good part of life. But this, I think, was horribly unfair, and I'm sad for him, and I'm sad for his family, and I'm sad for all of Chicago. I just hope Cub fans understand. He truly, he always appreciated Cub fans. He loved Cub fans. He never knew how important he was to them, I don't think, until he got sick 2 years ago, or however long ago it was now. But I hope the Cub fans know that, man, he loved you. He loved you all, and he appreciated you all. And he had a lot of gratitude for his opportunity to play in this city, in that ballpark, for you, the fans, who treated him with so much love and so much respect and so much reverence, all of it deserved, by the way. But he left this place, I hope for a better place, knowing that he loved you and you loved him. And, you know, that's something anyway.
Barry, we appreciate you and we love you very much. Thank you so much for sharing all of this stuff about Rhino.
Yeah, I hope there was something in there for you. I'm wiped out. It's been a long week, and we'll celebrate him. Certainly we'll celebrate him. It doesn't feel that way right now. Certainly not. I don't know, at least not for me, but we will. And we'll remember what a good man he was and what a great player he was. So I'll let you guys go. Thanks for having me, boys.
Hey, buddy, everybody's processing, and you've done a great service in helping, really. So thank you. Talk to you.
All right, see you, boys. Barry Rosner joining us to talk about Rhino. We will get the opportunity to spend a few minutes with one of Rhino's teammates. Andre Dawson going to join us next here on The Score.
Andre Dawson, the Hawk. No player in baseball history worked harder, suffered more, or did it better than Andre Dawson. He's the best I've ever seen. Stand up, Hawk. The Hawk. I watched him win an MVP for a last place team in 1987, and it was the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen in baseball. He did it the right way, the natural way, and he did it in the field and on the bases and in every way. And I hope he will stand up here someday.
Ryne Sandberg talking about Andre Dawson. Beautiful moment in his Hall of Fame speech. The Hawk is now joining us here on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Andre, thank you so much for joining us. What did Rhino mean to you?
Just give me.
What's that, Andre?
The me 1 second.
You got it, man. You got it.
Yeah, it's emotional for all of us. And hearing that guy talk about you as beautifully as he talked about you, we completely understand.
Yes, sir. It was said earlier today by Sean Dunstan on MLB Network that Ryan Sandberg made sure to call some of his former teammates and friends to say, I love you. And Sean said that he called you, Andre. Is that true? Did Rhino call you this week?
Yeah, we talked about 10 days or so ago.
Hmm.
And, you know, he was so positive, so upbeat. And he never wanted you to think that anything was wrong. But after we hung up, his daughter just said, I'm going to let you all know what really is going on.
Hmm.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Man, we appreciate you being with us on the phone at a moment like this. I can't imagine how hard it must be to think about your friend and teammate who's just passed.
Yeah, when I found out, you know, that things had pretty much taken a turn for the worse. The one thing she said, Andre, Sean, I'm going to let you know what's really going on. She said, Dad is, he had a tough night and he's going to start hospice and the doctors are only giving him a week.
Mm.
And that was sort of hard to take in. But I guess ultimately, you know, this day was coming. You had to prepare yourself for it. I can't imagine, you know, what it's been like with this family to, you know, go through the ordeal itself. But Rhino was, you know, he was everything to me. I lockered between him and Sean Dunstan, and he would speak, and Sean would say, "You know, that's all you're gonna get." And Sean would start chirping, and Rhino would look at me. I'd look at him. And they say, Hulk, welcome to the next 6 months. But I tell you what, he was, you're talking about right there at the top, one of my all-time favorite teammates. You know, he was like a brother. And just to, you know, hear him loosen up so much post-career, that's when he, you know, really was a little bit more talkative. And we would chat on occasions, especially a little bit more when it was diagnosed, you know, when he was diagnosed with the prostate issue. I talked with him about my ordeal with prostate cancer and, you know, how I was cancer-free and how I was going to pray and pray hard for him to get through this. It's a process. And we just, you know, talked on occasions about the progress he was making. And then when he was once declared cancer-free, you know, there was a lot of jubilation. I could hear it in his voice. I could see it when I saw him. And then when it, you know, when it resurfaced and it was determined that it had metastasized, I knew that meant the worst. And, you know, I don't want to go off course too much, but I just want to say, you know, he meant everything to me. Was like a brother, and he was a consummate professional, great teammate, phenomenal ball player, and, you know, going to be greatly missed.
For people that didn't have the pleasure of being in those clubhouses with you guys, what was it about him that made you connect? Because, I mean, truth be told, Hawk, you were known as a pretty serious guy too back in the day. So I feel like that connection with two guys who worked as hard as you guys did is a pretty easy connection to make.
Well, I could look to my right and I could see a resemblance of myself. I was not that outspoken. Kept to myself a lot, on the quiet side. I believed in leading by example, going out, playing every day if that was possible, and just leaving everything out on the field. And that's how he played. He practiced that way. He played that way. And it rubbed off on you. He rubbed off on a lot of ball players, not just in that clubhouse, but around the game itself. And, you know, like I said, he was just right to my right. I could reach out and I can touch him. And it was just, you know, fun and exciting for me to be able to be on the same playing field with him and being able to even learn some things from him, even though I had a few years in the major leagues on him. But you know, he was just an individual that he would rub off on you in the most positive way possible. And you loved him for that.
Talking to Andre Dawson, the Hall of Famer, right here on the Spiegel & Holmes Show on The Score. You, as an ambassador, have been wonderful with the Cubs. Ryan Sandberg, as an ambassador here in, you know, the last decade or so of his life was just wonderful. He really took to that role, didn't he, Hawk? The way that you're talking about his personality kind of blooming, it seemed like he'd gotten very comfortable and enjoyed doing that these recent years.
Yeah, he did, because people loved him. And he understood that, he embraced it, and he took it for what it was worth. You always saw him with a smile on his face. That's what I'll always remember. And he was so down to earth. He wasn't animated at all. He played the game the way he was supposed to play it. And like I say, he just left everything out on the field.
Well, Hawk, we appreciate you. We truly do. We know that this is hard. Like, this is as hard as it is for those of us that watch them from afar, for someone who was there with them, it's got to be painful. And so we appreciate you picking up the phone, and we thank you very much for sharing your stories of Rhino with the people who absolutely loved him here in Chicago. Thanks for joining us today.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Andre. It's Andre Dawson, who works as a...
That's hard.
Yeah, man. He works as a funeral director these days, does Andre Dawson. Picked up that business from a friend of his down in Florida. And obviously that's a man who loved Rhino.
Yep. That comes across. It's, oh.
I love that that idea of how similar they were as ballplayers.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you hear stories. Like, Hawk was no joke, man. Like, he's a serious, proud man. And, like, now I love the idea of here's a serious guy. Here's a serious guy.
Yep, yep, yep.
And there's Sean Dawson. the young, like, freewheeling kid back in those days. Like, the guy who had the incredible arm. And you're like, man, wait till you see Dustin throw from the hole. Wait till you see them turn a double play and him come across the bag and just let one rip. And like, these two dudes, like, these two serious guys. And he's there to kind of be the buffer, like to be the comic relief and to be a little bit goofy.
Yeah.
And being able, if you're Hawk, being able to see yourself in that person is amazing.
It's a pretty amazing mix of people when you think about it. Like the 89 team with Zimmer, who came out of nowhere to win the National League East that year. That's Andre Dawson and Ryan Sandberg and Sean Dunston and Mark Grace. Like,
right.
You know, like freewheeling, you know, playboy Mark Grace with the 862 OPS. Rhino, by the way, 30 homers and 76 ribs, 104 runs scored that year. And then rookie Jerome Walton, rookie Dwight Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely killing it. And oh, by the way, Greg Maddux and Rick Sutcliffe on the front of the rotation.
Yeah.
That's a really damn likable team. And Zimmer had him playing like a lot of hit and run and base running and, like, you know, classic Zimmer stuff where he gets a team going. It's no wonder so many people loved those teams, even though they didn't win the big one. But, like, you had a very likable late 80s batch of Cubs there.
Yeah, and if we were to get Barry Rosner back on the show to talk about Greg Maddux and then the antics of Greg Maddux inside of a clubhouse.
Yeah, all of it.
Yeah.
And then Sutcliffe.
Yeah, there's a lot there. There's a lot there. We need to take a timeout. When we come back, why don't we share what Doug said about him? Because I thought we had a good conversation with Doug Glanville, who wrote a beautiful piece about Rhino that speaks to exactly what we're talking about. So we will share that with you next here on The Score.
Just want to take a second as we get going here just to acknowledge the passing of Ryan Sandberg. You know, that I grew up a big Cubs fan, and so he was a big part of my childhood, my family. We watched him, Mark Grace, the whole crew on WGN for a number of years, and I know what he means to the city and the career that he had. So just thoughts and prayers to his family.
Bears head coach Ben Johnson talking about Rhino. In 10 minutes, we're going to talk with the great Bob Costas. It's Spiegel and Holmes show. Last week, we had this conversation with Doug Glanville because Doug had written this beautiful piece in his Substack about Rhino. And we wanted you to hear it, too, because it really speaks to the heart of this man and why so many people want to talk about him.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why Sandberg was so important to me, because I understood that interview with Rhino was so great because it was a degree of separation interview, and I connected my career to Jackie Robinson through this sort of Jackie Robinson celebration. And I went through, you know, Bill Buckner, I talked to Jimmy Rollins, I talked to Rhino, it was so cool. And Buckner learned from Dick Allen, because Dick Allen, when Buckner used to kind of get upset, and Dick Allen just said to him, "Hey, man, you don't think you're going to ever get a hit? So why are you stressed out?" You know, he kind of just like, he said, "You're acting that way because you're acting like you don't have the confidence to know I'm going to get you next time." And that was great for Buckner to then channel that into preparation and focus. And then Rhino got traded and came along and said, "Okay, you know, here's Bill Buckner. Let me watch this guy." And he caught the back end of Buckner after those lessons, where Buckner was a pro, a focused, channeled that sort of intensity to greatness. And Sandberg came along after trying to battle these demons in the minors about not caring and needing to break a helmet. And look, I remember in spring training one year when I got demoted from Double A to A ball, you know, I was in the Cubs minors, and I was really upset. It was a new regime had taken over. And I was like, "Why are you sending me back? I'm hitting 350. I'm stealing bases. The Double A manager said I'm going to make the team, and you're sending me back to A ball." And it was a little bit of a battle. We had meetings, and there's a rule, and I don't know if it still exists, that you're allowed to take 72 hours of mental leave when you get demoted. And nobody takes it because it looks like you don't want to play. So I was like frustrated. So I took my 72 hours and I sat in the stands watching games, and they got real mad at me. And at one point, one of the coordinators said to me, "If you don't like it, you can go home. You're done. You're done here." And I was like, "Okay, I'm packing my bags then." And then a couple of people, the brass came in and said, whoa, slow down. Let's have a meeting first. Let's talk about it." So then they kind of explained why they were sending me back to A ball. I didn't buy it, but I had to accept it. And I think they were more truthful that time. And one of the coaches, Rick Patterson, who is a, you know, minor league coordinator, said to me this, and this stuck with me. He said, "Every team And every player on that team is going to carry this team at some point or another. I don't care if you're the 25th guy, the bench guy, the pinch hitter, the backup, you know, reliever, whatever you are, you will carry this team. You will have your moment in the sun. And that was a moment of understanding that this is a team and you need all these personalities, quiet, rah-rah, coaches, pet, whatever. You need all those guys. And it's all about timing and knowing when to elevate each voice. And Sandberg, when I watched him come to rehab in Daytona Beach and I was in A-ball after he broke his hand in 93, I saw a guy hardly said a word but just destroyed his opponents. And I said, that shows me that there is a pathway to be who I am and still be great at this game. And that's and he didn't have to say a word to give me and many others that gift.
Man, that is Doug Glanville, who shared a demeanor with Ryan Sandberg in his own eyes as a young player and realized that is a pathway. That is an opportunity for how I can be as a player. I don't have to be loud and demonstrative and chatty and all of that. I can be me and still be great. That is a powerful example to set for a young player.
How about the through line of Dick Allen to Bill Buckner to Ryan Sandberg to Doug Glanville?
My goodness, that's baseball history. I just got chills thinking about it, man. You and I both connect with that part of baseball and that part of sports, of like connecting everything. This hour has been unbelievable. If you've missed it or you're just hopping in, make sure you go back and listen to Barry Rosner tell beautiful and personal stories about his relationship with Ryan Sandberg. A Hawk, Andre Dawson could, you know, had struggled to get himself together and understandably to think about his teammate, his late teammate. Just it hit both me and Lawrence very hard this hour. And then right there, beautiful stuff from Doug Glanville. Alex Kuhn and Chris Tannehill are killing it today. So thank you, boys.
We need to take a time out. When we come back, if you remember the Sandberg game, you'll remember that Bob Costas was on the call. He's going to share stories of Rhino and what that did for that guy's career. Next, here on The Score.